And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from the decrepit remains of the Jalen and Jacoby studio in Los Angeles, California, where I am thrilled to finally be joined by Mr. Big Shot, 2004 Finals MVP, current NBA countdown, jump, everything analyst, the great Chauncey Billups. How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here, Low.
Are you happy?
I am.
Okay. You're a very happy guy, actually. I find you're a positive presence to be around, which is probably why, one of the reasons you were a beloved NBA teammate.
So blessed, man. So much to be happy about, you know?
Okay. You don't have a lot of time, so we're going to fly through the life of Chauncey Billups.
Right.
We'll hit some highlights. Maybe this will work, maybe it won't. We'll hit some highlights.
Of course it's going to work.
I ran into D. Brown last night at the Clippers game.
D. Coven Brown.
Currently the GM of the Clippers D-League team.
Yep.
Your teammate, when you got drafted by the Celtics, said, "Oh, you're having Chauncey on your podcast tomorrow?" I said, "Yeah, I'm having Chauncey on." He said, ask him about if he cried when we got traded to Toronto together. Because I'd forgotten he got traded with you to Toronto. He said, "Yeah, Chauncey, ask him if he cried." So did you cry?
No.
He said you cried.
No.
Oh, we have a discrepancy.
No.
Oh.
No, I did not cry.
Okay.
In fact, I was happy to be traded from Boston.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I say that to say this. Like, you're the third pick in the draft. Like, I thought I would be in Boston for 10 years of my whole career, you know. But quickly I found out that, you know, me and the situation didn't mesh well. And so by the time that trade deadline came, I was like, I'm ready.
I skimmed over some stuff about you and from that part of your career. And there was a part of you, I think it's even quoted, where you're like, it was unprecedented for a first-round draft pick, let alone a third pick, to get traded in his rookie year. There was part of you that was like, that's weird. But you were actually happy.
I was happy. I was happy because you don't understand how many times during that, whatever, how many months I was there, I was just like, man, I dreamed about the league and being in the league all my for since I was 10. This can't be it. Like, this, I know people in the league, this has not been their experience. Like, I was, so many times, I was just like, man, I wish I'd stayed in school.
College was fun. You just said on the show that college was a lot of fun.
Man. I enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed college.
Well, Rick Pitino, the story went, thought, you know, Chauncey's just, he's like a shoot first guard, you know, not a playmaker, he's not a point guard. It's just not my cup of tea as a player. Is that essentially what it was from your perspective?
Yeah, pretty much. But the funny thing is, like, going in, I was thinking, like, damn, Kentucky, like, they get up and down and shoot threes and they push the ball and they play D and, like, everything that I do.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, this is going to be perfect. And, you know, it just didn't work out. But I'll be honest with you. I learned a lot from Coach Pitino, though. He's a brilliant, brilliant basketball mind.
I was going to ask, have you talked to him since all
I've
that?
Seen him a couple of times, but I don't really talk to him. But, I mean, I'm grateful for the situation, and I learned a lot through it, to be honest.
So you and Ron Mercer drafted together.
Yeah.
3-6?
3-6.
3-6. I had forgotten about this, tracing your crazy career path until you get to Detroit. Well, really until you get to Minnesota and then Detroit when your career really starts to take off. Not only were you and Ron Mercer drafted together, you were traded together a second time, not from Boston. You were traded from Denver to Orlando, I think. Is that right?
That's correct.
That's crazy.
That's correct.
Where the hell is Ron Mercer?
I don't know. I think Ron is living in maybe Nashville, doing very well in business. Just a family man, golfing, got a son. Like, he's doing well.
Do you consider yourself a member of the Orlando Magic?
No.
Played zero games for them, but you're technically we're on the team. I think.
For instance, I got in my basement, I got all my jerseys posted up of teams I played since high school. Orlando's not on there.
Really?
No.
You technically got a jersey number. I believe you were number 2 for the Orlando Magic.
I don't even remember.
I read this somewhere, and if I read it, it obviously has to be true.
Yeah. Maybe.
Again, we're flying through here. 2004, you win the championship.
Yeah.
People all remember the finals, Shaq and Kobe and the Karl Malone, Gary Payton team.
Mm-hmm.
People, for many different reasons, remember the rivalry with the Pacers, which was in the conference finals that year.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people remember you were down 3-2 to the Nets in the second round.
On the road.
Game 5, which you lose, is your famous half-court shot to send the game to overtime. You then lose in triple overtime or something like that. So then you're down 3-2, going, as you said, on the road. So that's the moment, right? That's like the moment, like this is either going to be a team that makes the next level or like right. we're just out in the second round. So like, what do you remember from those 48 hours or whatever leading up to that game? Cause that's the game that the, there are not, you got like four games like that in yeah. your entire career.
Yeah. First of all, the, losing the game when I hit the shot was one of the most deflating losses. You're at home playing against a team that swept you last year, who was the king of the Eastern Conference, the Nets. One of my idols I'm playing against, one of my heroes, Jason Kidd, I'm playing against. So I'm enjoying that battle. But you lose that game, and you go into the closeout game in Jersey. And I just remember us, like, believing like there was no way we should have lost that game. Like, four of our starters had fouled out, with the exception of me. And we just felt like we was the better team, you know. So we really was looking forward to getting to New Jersey.
Really?
In a major way.
There was no way. Like there was no, boy, we're underdogs, we're on the road. It was like we're
well, we almost that was kind of our deal, you know. We always were at our best when our backs were against the wall, anyway. Which is who we became. It's kind of who we all were, you know. We were all kind of been thrown away by so many different organizations and coaches and teams and. And that was our play. Like so it was a perfect storm for us.
What do you remember about after a game like that in the locker room? You've won. You know you're going home for seven. Is it calm or is it like you're hungry and you feel it? Like what's that like?
Well, after winning that game, we felt like that was our game seven. That was how we felt. I mean, Rip hit a big shot to win the game for us, to seal the game for us.
Rip I think had two jumpers in crunch time.
Uh-huh. But we felt like this is their game seven, but ours too, because if we win this game, there's no way they're beating us in game seven at home. And so we put everything we had into game six, and it was a dogfight, man. It was a
dogfight. You were down early.
Yeah, it was a dogfight. It was a dogfight.
So that's a good – that's a fun flight back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a fun flight, but it's also a flight to saying, like, okay, this ain't over.
Yeah, it's true.
You know what I mean? This ain't over. Like, we haven't won any. We haven't won the series yet.
So you get to the finals, and you are just as you described, this sort of team of guys who get traded, cast-offs. So Tayshaun Prince is coming out of college. Like, no one knows how good he's going to be, and you're playing the Lakers. Mm-hmm. The Lakers, mm-hmm. Who had recently three-peated and had Malone and Peyton in their, like, you know, let's get one at the end of our careers phase.
Yeah.
And you whipped the Lakers. Like, it was not close. That series was not close. And it was one of those series that was clear as someone who was just watching it as a fan. Like, by sometime in game three, maybe earlier in game four, it was like, ooh, this, they've got to figure it out.
When did it took you that long?
Well, I don't, that's what I was going to ask. When did you feel as a team like, oh, we got these guys? Because you know there's a moment where you're like, we got these guys.
Well, I felt before we even played game one that we would win the series. I even told my wife that. She didn't even believe me. It's funny as hell. She didn't even believe me, but it was really based on how we played against them, you know, really during the regular season. And we just had some things that I knew they couldn't stop. And I felt we was going to beat them. But game one, after winning game one, I said, oh, there's no way that they can beat us.
That's it.
There's no way that they can beat us.
Even when they win game two?
I mean, we're all so pissed that they still right now today that they won game two.
Really?
I'm still cussing Rip out.
Really?
For giving Kobe space on that damn 3-point shot.
I got to go rewatch that. What? That's at the end of the game.
Oh, I'm still cussing Rip out.
So you wanted the sweep. Like, even historically now, you're like, man, we wanted the
100%. Because even today, Zach, we're champions and we will always be. And it's beautiful. It's wonderful. And the city of Detroit and everything, the fan base. But it's all about the Lakers losing and not us winning.
I don't think that's true.
Oh, man, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me.
Well, you guys are always held up as the, and maybe this annoys you too, as the exception to, like, everyone's like, oh, to win a championship, you have to have one or two guys who are top 10 NBA players, superstars. Yeah. But there was that one team, the Pistons, you know, they were the exception to that, but they're an exception. What do you guys think when you hear that? Are you proud of that? Well, or are you like, hey, we got some guys who were top 10 guys?
Yeah, we had, at that point, we only had, I think, maybe one all-star, and that was Ben had been one, and then she was one, not with us, but before. But we didn't have any superstars. We didn't. It's true. You know, we had all-star caliber guys, and we proved that later. But we didn't have a superstar. We didn't have a max player. We didn't have what was deemed necessary, you know, to go win a championship. So a lot of that stuff is true. I don't take it as we didn't get any respect, but we ended up earning that, you know.
Are you almost proud of it in a way, like being the quote-unquote exception?
I am proud of it, and here's why. I don't think it'd ever be done again.
You don't think so?
No. Not for one, the rules and the money, everything is so different now, Zach, you know. So, but the way that we did it, I don't think it'd ever be done again, man.
I guess we'll see. I thought you might be annoyed by it. I guess it's kind of a cool thing.
No, I like it.
Hey, listeners, 23andMe is a DNA testing service that can offer insights into your ancestry, health, wellness, and other traits. That's important stuff. The 23andMe Health and Ancestry Service includes a report on how your DNA can influence your weight, your sleep quality, your caffeine intake of all things, your sense of taste, whether you're more likely or less likely to be lactose intolerant, lots more stuff. It's easy to do. All you do is spit into the tube provided in your 23andMe kit and mail your saliva sample back to the lab to be analyzed, and it will give you lots of stuff. It'll give you something called the bitter taste report and the sweet versus salty reports, because DNA can play a role in your food preferences, and whether you like sweet or salty or bitter stuff. It'll give you a sleep report. It has something called the deep sleep report that tells you if you are more likely to be an especially deep sleeper, and the sleep movement report tells you how much you're likely to move around during your sleep. Wouldn't you like to know that? Order your 23andMe Health and Ancestry Service Kit at 23andme.com/low, my last name, the name of this podcast, L-O-W-E. That's 23andme.com, 23andme.com/low, L-O-W-E.
So you made 6 straight conference finals, which is insane.
In Detroit. 7.
Well, okay, you're right.
When I went to Denver.
You're right. That's right. And that was a very good team, too, by the way.
That was a good team.
A series that, I, for whatever reason, is not remembered as being as close as it was. Still see those inbounds passes, like, in your mind's eye, don't you? Bro. The Trevor Ariza steals.
Unbelievable.
Who threw them? You didn't throw either of them, I don't think.
Carter, no.
AC threw one.
AC threw one. I forgot who threw the other one, but the whole it's a whole story behind it, man. I always would just be like, why are we? And AC was one of our best passers, but he's 6'1". They're gonna put a big guy on the ball. Like, why would you put a little point guard to throw the ball? He can't see. It's so much you can't see with Lamar Odom and these guys tracing the ball. Yeah.
What's the year in Detroit that you don't win? Which there are 5 of those years, but what's the conference finals year that you look back on and it's like, man, that's the one. That's the one that it irritates me the most.
The Boston one.
08?
The Boston one, yeah. That one, no, it was 0.
The year Boston won.
Yeah, 08.
Yeah, 08.
That one, because I really felt we were the better team. And they were so good, man. Damn, Boston was so good. But I got hurt in the first round. I pulled my groin against Orlando. And so I was out for the rest of that series. I came back and played a little bit in the Philly series, but I wasn't really healthy. And I started finally getting healthy towards the end of the Boston series. I started playing better and getting, but I did. I felt like if I was healthy in that series, we win the series and we go beat the Lakers again.
I grew up a Celtics fan. I've told you this. Mm-hmm. And that was about the last year where I was a fan and not doing this professionally. I feared you guys more than because that Celtics team, they went 7 against Atlanta in the first round. They went 7 against LeBron in the second round. It's like not like they were rolling through. Now, I do think they hit their stride a little bit when they got to you.
Was good, man.
But, yeah, I thought you were going to say 05.
Posey. Oh, well, of course that. But I thought you said an Eastern.
Oh,
you said Eastern finals.
Any year.
Oh, shit. 05. Of course. I mean, the worst loss I ever, the darkest day in my league, and no trades, no nothing. The darkest day in my career as a pro was when Ori hit that shot in game 5 on us. I mean, that was...
You're about to go up 3-2.
Oh, man. That killed. That was brutal.
In preparation for this, I rewatched it. And I'm like, let me see where Chauncey was when Robert Ori hit that shot. And look, I watch it a couple times. Like, I don't see him. Oh, there's Lindsey Hunter. Wait a second. Then I checked the box. I was like, did he foul out? And I just forgot. Like, no, 2 fouls.
What? You've seen how well I was playing in that guy. I had like 30-something and
so
like 9.
So what is going on? You're an all-defensive player. There's no need to replace you for defense.
Here's what's crazy about that play. So we're in the huddle. Of course, me and everybody else saying no matter what, no threes. No threes, press up, a 2 don't kill us, no threes. We walk back on the floor. We get set up. I see Lindsey Hunter come to the desk. I'm like, perfect. We good. He gonna get Sheed.
Right. Switch everything.
Tay's gonna go to Ori. Lindsey's gonna come in and take Manu. I'm gonna stay on Tony. Rip is on Bowen, and then we got Ben right there for Timmy. We good. Buzzer goes off and he says, Chance, I got you. I'm like, what the hell? I just didn't understand it. So obviously it's no time to, no. It's time to win the game. You worry about it later. And, for so many reasons, like it's just crazy. I mean, I didn't have any issues defensively.
No, but you made at least one defense team.
Yeah, not only that. What happens if the rebound comes off and your free throw shooter's not in the game? I mean, there's just so many different. I really think, for real, I think Larry just kind of choked in that moment.
Really?
Yeah, I think he kind of choked and I don't know.
I couldn't believe
it. That was crazy.
I'm sitting there looking around.
How you think I felt?
First of all,
I'm the MVP of the series if we win again.
Probably.
It's over.
Okay.
It's over. I'm the MVP of the series if we win it again. That's two times back to back.
Have you ever
talked
to Larry Brown about this since?
Nah, man. I ain't talked to Larry about it. But that was crazy, though. It's funny that you mentioned that. That was crazy.
This has been told before, but I just think it's such a good story that I want you to tell it again. I believe it was in Charlotte when you find out you're on the road somewhere where you find out you get traded from Detroit to Denver. Mm-hmm. And Rip comes to your hotel room. What's this? Tayshaun. I think Tayshaun is the third one. I think the three of you are in there. And then I just think it's an unbelievable story.
It was crazy. There was some talk about it possibly being done. And we was just like, nah, no way, whatever, you know. So I'm getting dressed for a shoot around. This is the fourth game of the season. Fifth game. We was 4-0. We was 4-0. This is the fifth game of the season. I'm getting dressed for a shoot around. And I get the call from my agent, Andy Miller, at the time. Said, Chance, don't get on that bus. They just did the deal. So I'm like, what's me? What deal? Turn on the SportsCenter. It's going across the screen. Me for AI, whatever. Mm-hmm. So we all found out at the same time. So Rip, first he called my phone, but I'm talking to Andy. I'm talking to my wife. I'm talking to, you know, this is crazy. So Rip comes to the room. And he's just in disbelief in a major way because he just signed his extension.
Oh, that's right.
That Friday before premise of
we're riding
finishing
again.
Our career together.
Yeah.
Because he was holding out. Like, I want to test the market.
I forgot about that part of it.
So he just signed his deal on that premise. They do the deal on the trade. He's knocking on the door. I hang up, answer. He just started crying, man. Like, dog, I can't believe this. Now Tay comes. Now, again, I'm getting ready for shoot around.
Yeah.
So everybody else is too.
Yeah.
Everybody ended up coming to my room.
To blow off shoot around.
Nobody went to shoot around. You know, I had to leave and fly back. Like, I had to go in like 2 hours, you know. So it was a bad, bad day, man. It was a bad day, man.
I just picture that scene of three, four or five, whatever it is, tough. Growing men weeping. I'm like, that's what it means to be on a team.
It was bad, man. Yeah.
If you love scoring amazing hotel deals, you've got to use Hotel Tonight. Don't scroll through the never-ending list of hotels at other sites. Hotel Tonight shows you a select list of the best deals at very cool hotels that you actually would want to stay at. And even though it's called Hotel Tonight, you can book in advance, not just at the last minute. You can use it for vacations, for spontaneous weekend getaways, road trips, business trips. You can specify whether it has a pool, all that stuff. So to start scoring amazing deals at incredible hotels, go to hoteltonight.com or download the app.
So I watched another clip from your past to see. Let me see where Chauncey is during this clip. I watched another clip. The Malice in the Palace.
Yeah.
So Jonathan Abrams wrote a piece on the Malice. Rachel just walked in with cake.
I love it.
There you go. Sorry,
thank you.
I was at the Malice in the Palace.
I'm dieting, Rachel. So Malice in the Palace.
Yeah, I can join. It's a perfect place for me to just totally wreck your podcast.
Yeah.
And join in.
Jonathan Abrams at Grantland wrote a huge oral history of the Malice in the Palace like 5 years ago. I interviewed everybody that was involved.
Yeah.
But not you. And I think it's because you're whatever team you were on at the time you wrote it was like, yeah, it's we can't make Chauncey available. He's too busy. We're playing a game. Mm-hmm. It's a big subject. So I watched the, you know, I've seen it a million times. I'm like, where's Chauncey? You're just like on the side over here. You're just spectating calmly, professionally, as one would expect. What, you get asked about this, I'm sure, every day. What is the story that you tell people? What is like the flashbulb image? Aside from maybe the obvious ones of Steven Jackson and the crowd and all that, maybe it's something that happened in the locker room. Like, what's the thing from that that you will never forget?
Oh, so many, man. So many. But, you know, the reason why I wasn't out there is because actually they were blowing us out.
Yeah, it was there were 15.
So, you know, there's a point in the game where you take your starters out at the end. It was in the fourth quarter. Well, the only reason Ben didn't come out was he was shooting free throws. So it's like, all right, let him finish it out. Whatever. But some of the things that I'll never forget, one, like Darvin Ham's sons, just crying like somebody had been like shot.
His sons.
Yeah.
Who are, boys, are little, yeah. Probably, right?
Yeah, they're older now, obviously. But they were little and they, you know, they were like a part of the team. Like they're around the team. They ball boys. They, you know. So that's one. Another big one is Larry Brown crying in the locker room.
Really?
Oh man, he was crying, man. He was crying. Once we finally got to the locker room and settled back, Larry was literally crying in the locker room. And once he came to, all he said was, guys, we gave the game a black eye tonight.
Wow.
You know, and we was all like, dang, like we wasn't fighting nobody. You know what I mean? But I get it, you know, that's another one. I say this all the time, like, it would have just been easy if Ron Artest really wanted to fight, he should have just fought the dude that wanted to fight him. And it would have just been one-on-one, we would have broke it up and it would have been over.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to dude throwing the paper cup on you that you probably didn't even feel and just exploding, running up in the stands, just fight the dude that wanted to fight you. That's what we all wanted to see anyway.
What was the next game you played against them like? Now, obviously, Ron and Steven Jackson.
Well, so many guys didn't play. Yeah. It was just, you know, the interesting thing about it all is all of us were friends outside of Ron and Ben. Like, I trained with Al and Tinsley and J.O. And, like, we trained all summer together. Like, we all, Tayshaun, we all friends. J.O. and she, that's his young boy, that's his rook. Like, we all friends. So, it wasn't really all that big of a deal, like from a personal relationship.
Sure,
it didn't change anything.
What about the next home game? Period.
Oh, it was somber, man.
Really?
Yeah. It was somber.
Was it somber. Addressed at all? Like, did the PA end up?
With so many guys that didn't play.
Yeah.
You know, I think Tay's the only guy that didn't get suspended.
Even you got suspended?
You know, to cross the line.
No, once fans are on the floor,
one game. I got a one. I'm like, all right, cool. Whatever.
I watched for you. You should never got suspended for that game. Okay, one more quick one, and then you have to go.
How many suspensions did you ever have?
Probably maybe two. I think
I'm surprised you
got in trouble.
Any.
Well, we got
you
one.
Know my referees.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, how rare is it?
I think I threw the ball at Spooner one time and got suspended.
Ooh, I like that.
I had a couple.
What do you call
a couple?
Is this a family podcast?
It was
what did he call? What was the call?
I don't know what the call was, but it was a combination of me playing like crap and him making bad calls. And
aim at his legs just in case?
Well, it was like half court. It was a long way, but I threw a missile at him.
See, I would be afraid. I would aim at his stomach and then be like, and then mid throw, I'd be like, well, stomach, like if I miss high, I'm
not
hit
thinking
him in
about
the head.
None of that. I'm trying to hurt you. I'm not thinking about being nice with this throw.
If I hit the ref in the head, I'm going to get suspended for like five games.
I'm not thinking about none of that. You think I'm thinking about picking up this ball like, okay, I only really want a one gamer. Let me try to hit his knee. No, I'm trying to hurt
you're
you.
Just trying to hit him. Okay. I will ask this of everyone who knows this person when they come on this podcast. What is your single best Kevin Garnett story? You lived with KG. I believe when you first went to Minnesota, you lived, he called it the build up the Chauncey suite or something in his house, which I can only imagine what the hell his house is like in Minnesota.
Oh, it was amazing.
I mean, I don't know. This is a very open question.
Your story,
absolute KG. Favorite KG story.
Oh man, it's too many. But, Oh man, there's too many, and most of them are not. Even good for podcasts.
This is a profanity.
So you know that that's not good. But I think one of the ones is when he got into a fight and kind of beat up Wally Szczerbiak.
Okay,
that was it was boiling over for a long time, and he really wanted to teach Wally a lesson, and so Wally got kicked out of practice, and on his way out of practice, he had a lot to say to KG.
Okay, why'd he get kicked out?
Like playing dirty and just talking stuff to Flip, and just, you know, him and KG kind of mixing it up.
Sure.
So they sent Wally upstairs. At the time, we practiced in the basement of the Target Center. But so it was only about 15 minutes left in practice, and Wally goes upstairs and starts getting treatment. So he's hooked up to the, you know, stem unit and all of this. So KG, obviously, he's never calm anyway. So he's on 10 now. So he's ready for practice to get over. And I just keep seeing him say, y'all ain't going to stop me this time. I said, bro, it ain't that serious, you know, whatever. It's over, bro. It's, you know, we talk shit every day in practice, especially you. So he was like, nah, that's it. That's enough. So usually me and KG, every day after practice, we get our shots up for a half hour. We shoot the same routine, same everything, every day. So he says, we're going to shoot, but give me a second. So usually that means I got to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Get a drink of water.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Let me get a little water. Let me get some Gatorade. I didn't trust him. I didn't believe him.
Yep.
So it's a long ways to the locker room. And where we used to practice. So he leaves out of the door. And I remember Kevin McHale and Flip them saying, oh, shit. So you got to walk. You got to go up two flights of stairs and go all the way on the other side of the arena to get to our locker room. Boom. He leaves out of the door, takes off. So now me, Gary Trent, Sam Mitchell, we take off behind him.
Running.
We like it. Damn,
we have to save Wally.
Somebody should have stayed at the door. Because here's the thing. I'm not mad at it if Wally knows what's coming. So sure. You could prepare yourself for a fight. Man, you don't know what's coming to him, but you don't really know.
He's hooked up to some machinery, too. Man, he could be immobile.
He's laying on the training table hooked up to the machine. Wires, everything. And so we finally almost kind of catch up to KG. Because at one point he gets in the hallway, starts walking. So we kind of caught up to him a little bit. Once he seen us, he started running again like, I ain't letting y'all stop me. So I'm like, dang, man. So we didn't catch him. He comes right in the door. And Wally's like 2 feet away. And it was
Wally Szczerbiak has no chance.
It was a bad scene. It was a bad scene from there on out. And like, of course, the trainers and them can't stop. I mean, this I mean, once Wally seen him, I'm sure he was like, okay, then we got to do it. But he's hooked up to all the machines.
Give me 45 seconds here. Let me unhook myself.
Yeah. So he, you know, he hopped on Wally, and you know, obviously he got the best of him. But once we got in there, we was able to break it up before it got too bad.
There are so many NBA fight stories that never get out. Every time there's a fight in practice.
But that's good, though. I like that they don't get out.
No, but I'm saying every time there's a fight in practice, like the Jimmy Butler thing or the Miritich Portis thing last year, every ex-player I know is like, that stuff happens all the time. Like, this punch happened to connect, so Nikola Mirotic's face is broken, so it gets out because he's going to miss games. Yeah. And like, there's so much stuff that happens.
It's a part of the game. It happens all the time.
All right, you got to go. Get
this
out of here.
This is like anytime people are upset with like LeBron subtweeting people. And that, like, subtweeting his own teammates. I was like, Michael Jordan punched Steve Kerr in the face.
See, I'd rather have someone punch me than subtweet me.
What? Come on.
Just if you're going to punch, just come at me.
I'd rather the fight.
Come at me.
Why? Why?
I don't.
Because you're being a baby if you're subtweeting.
Like, don't be passive and be like, if it's on, it's just on. Like, let's figure it out.
Right.
Let's get to the bottom of it. Because, see, what we could do as men that no disrespect to women can't do.
I've never thrown a punch, so you're completely accurate there.
We can fight.
And then it's over.
we can literally fight, and one of us is going to get beat up.
I don't
up.
Like that right? He's pointing at me yeah. like he and but, I he and I could fight.
No, we're just the only men at the table.
Just an example. Yeah, we're just
me
an
and you
example.
Would never fight. You're yeah. my guy.
Okay.
Right.
But we can fight, and after we think about it, we can come back, we can hug, we can be all good, and it'd be straight.
Yeah, women don't do that.
Women can't do that.
No.
Nope. I really do think.
Nope.
So that's why I would rather the fight. My Let's just get it long. On, and then it's over.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a middle ground where, like, instead of tweeting instead of fitting out, fit in, or whatever right. this hell stupid thing he tweeted, you could just go to Kevin Love and be like, hey, let's talk about some of the bad vibes that are
Michael
on our team
Jordan
right now.
Punched Steve Kerr in the face.
What I'm saying is there's a middle ground between passive-aggressive subtweeting and punching, which is called having a direct, honest conversation. Why can't we just do that?
Aw. It's very touchy-feel.
Sounds good.
I will say, though, Chauncey's right. As now as the parent of a daughter.
Yes.
And, like, I know that this is coming. Like, and we're guys. Like, guys are too dumb to have these. Like, we're just dumb. Like, but when I think about, like, I never had, like, fights with my friends because, like, we would argue and, like, punch each other and then it would be done. Like, girls are really, are like mean. And
that
like,
relationship they're over forever.
They're yes. so, they're yes. so next level with the yep. manipulation and, yep. like, the intellectual, like, yep. it's, boys are dumb. Like,
yeah, just, we don't think
hey,
about,
let's go
thinking.
Watch a baseball game and we'll be done. Like, we're just dumb. It's just like, let's go watch sports and be done with it.
Listen, man. This was fun, dog.
Chauncey, have fun. See you on the jump at some point. Or
yeah,
see
man.
You
got, so
you got the best
today.
Guests.
And you got cake.
Oh, and I got goodness. Cake.
Right?
Chocolate cake.
There
Listen,
you go. Chocolate cake. Chocolate hazelnut cake. Come on, please.
I'm
oh,
dieting.
Please.
You can't bring me this stuff. You're like my mother.
By the way, you've
Which
been on a diet.
Which sounded bad.
I didn't mean
it like that came up. But my mom is always like, Zach, you're getting a little heavy. You need to lose some weight. We have ice
Which
cream
I
and
never
we have ice cream and we have ice cream and cake at the house for Thanksgiving. Do you want some ice cream and cake? Why don't you want any cake? I bought all this cake and all these chocolate chip cookies. Right. Yeah, mom, you can't give me the mixed messages.
I think your mom is probably nicer to you than I am.
I mean, almost everyone I know is nicer to me. You are Rachel.
I brought you cake. First of all, I brought you cake. And second of all, you've been on a diet, quote unquote, for like 6 months.
No, it's not true. I went to Croatia.
At some point, you have to eat a piece of bread. I did get you to eat a piece of bread at lunch the other day by accident. I didn't realize. But.
I already don't remember this.
Yeah. You blacked it out.
Yeah. How are you? Happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm interested that you – I'm looking at your piece of paper, which, as you know, is one of my favorite things about coming on your podcast.
Yes.
And that that when you told me you wanted me to sort of follow Chauncey on today, first of all, you told me that you might cancel me at any moment for a more famous guest, which is what I've come to expect from you. I was glad to see that Ike Barinholtz came last week.
He is becoming famous.
Because he's famous? On a TV show.
He and I have a relationship that pre-exists his fame.
Because you're friends with Mindy Kaling.
No, we're not friends. I'm not friends with Mindy. I'm friends with the writers on Mindy's show.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an actor on the show.
Yes. I think if you are a series regular on a national TV show that goes multiple seasons, you are famous. Okay. No?
Yeah, I guess.
Right?
Yeah.
So
like,
I was worried. I was worried that he would cancel and try to reschedule for today, which means I would get kicked out. But instead, he actually kept his word. By the way, I want to know, can I switch to the big chair? Because I'm in the little kid's chair right now.
Because he's at an angle talking to you like
this.
Oh,
and that's bad. Can you explain to people in the studio who are listening the difference between what is happening here?
Well, there are two different chairs. One is to my left. Rachel's getting out of that chair and getting into the one that's directly across from me.
Okay, but how?
Very exciting podcast content.
How high was that chair? It was like a little kid baby chair.
That's like the basketball player chair.
Right.
That you just got out of. I accidentally sat in T-Max chair on the set yesterday and I sunk like almost below the table. I don't know what we were talking about.
We were talking about the fact that you told me that I was going to come on after Chauncey, and you said, oh, I've got all this stuff prepped for Chauncey, which I see
CB.
In the piece of paper
CB.
In front of me. And for me, you were like, yeah, I don't have anything.
No, I have stuff, but I have a more long-term, natural, pre-existing rapport with you.
So you have to make
Chauncey has a whole NBA career that I wanted to dig back in and think of specific things. Put the phone down. We're in the middle of a podcast. Put it down.
Zach's getting social media'd right now.
This is really bad. Okay, let's talk about Jimmy Butler.
Okay.
Because you landed the interview of the early season in Minneapolis with Jimmy Butler. You said on the jump or on Twitter or somewhere, Jimmy Butler called, and or Jimmy Butler's people called, well, and said, come to Minneapolis.
Okay, so here's the whole play-by-play. So Jimmy's someone I've had a relationship with since he was a rookie. This is one of the advantages of – see, today's my birthday, as you mentioned with the cake, of being – having many birthdays and having done many jobs in this league or around media. So I have been a newspaper reporter. I have been a reporter for SportsCenter. I have been a sideline reporter. I now host an NBA show. So through that, you develop, you know, good working relationships with people. I've been interviewing Jimmy on and off, whether it's like sit down interviews or just on the court, sideline interviews or whatever for years. And as you know, Zach, I don't really love being the host now who's in the studio who doesn't go to games or talk to anyone. I don't understand that. To me, if I'm going to sit and talk about these guys all season,
it's easier.
I know.
You don't have to work as much. There's no secret to why people want to do that. It's easier.
I mean,
just live an easier life.
I understand. I see that sometimes. I'll be honest. Like that always just, it boggles my mind. If I'm going to sit and talk about people on TV for an hour
away.
Oh, this could go on your list.
Why is boggle?
Boggle the mind. Maybe you like
is
mix
shake?
Up the boggle.
Is boggle
like shake?
The game? Boggle.
It had
I never liked
pre-
that game.
It had to have predated
that game.
The
sucks.
Game.
Boggle sucks.
That's a take. Why does boggle suck? What's wrong
Nobody
with boggle?
Nobody wants to play boggle. If you have more than three board games in your house and one of them is boggle,
less
no
three.
One will ever pick boggle. Oh. It doesn't matter what the other two
have
are.
Have you played boggle as a drinking game?
I'm an adult person, so no.
Well, my college was more fun than you. Than yours. I think Boggle the Mind has to predate the game.
Yeah, no, it does.
We're
I just
look
don't
that
I, it just struck me that so it boggles your mind that,
well, anyway,
that this
so,
is an arrangement that people choose.
No, I'm sorry. I don't mean to get off on how everyone does their job is awesome and their own business. For me, I find it too hard to not to sit there and talk about guys for an hour a day on television and not actually talk to the people themselves. So I am always going to games and practices and through text, like keeping up with the guys that I know in the league to sort of check in on them and what's going on. And certainly when this stuff really bubbled over preseason or pre-training camp, right, with Jimmy Butler, I'm going to check in with Jimmy Butler and say, hey, dude, what's happening, right? So we had been sort of texting or you know, a couple phone calls back and forth over the weeks of sort of I'm on TV talking about Jimmy Butler every day. So I want
sure.
to get
check
updates
in.
And yeah. sort of reporting on what's going on. So I'm doing that. And, of course, as time goes by and it's clear that he's not holding out, right, because it was an excused absence from the Timberwolves, but not publicly. He didn't speak on this publicly, right, since the reports came out or whatever. I would said, you know, at some point it's sort of like, okay, at some point you're going to talk to the media again. He's not going to go the rest of his career without talking to the media. So – we had talked about, hey, when you're ready, whenever it is that you're ready to do this, like, let's sit down and do something on camera. And he had been in LA the week before, and he was actually going to come into the show.
Yeah, I
that
keep track
of
his whereabouts. He's the,
right?
he's the first he was like where the team wasn't, then
right,
he was
right, right.
with the team, but then he was like slithering. So yes, he was in LA. He was going to come on the jump. Which
he was
there, great.
Which, right. So he's going to come into the studio. That was how he was going to kind of come on and talk. And right about then was the time where the deal with Miami really heated up. And so
I canceled plans. There was a Sunday night.
He was going to come in like on a Thursday or Friday.
But there was a Sunday night when it was going to happen.
Yes.
When
everyone
thought
it
was done.
Right.
And I canceled plans, Rachel. You know what and when it didn't happen, you know what I decided?
Yes.
You know what I said? I am not putting my life on hold anymore for Jimmy Butler. I was going to even cancel my trip to Philly to do a podcast with Elton Brand because I was like, Elton, you
right,
need to get traded anymore. I was like, you know what? No.
No.
I'm taking a stance.
I'm taking a that is.
I will not put my life on hold for Jimmy Butler.
Zach, that's so brave of you.
There are heroes among us. Anyway.
So it was a Thursday or Friday and they kind of those talks were really bearing in. And in a smart look, I wouldn't put my client on TV either when they were in the middle of trade, whatever. So, you know, Jimmy and his agent decided that it wasn't that smart to have him come on TV and say stuff for the first time if potentially Tibbs was really possibly going to give in and trade him to Miami. So he didn't come in the studio, but then as you note, over the weekend, they all thought the deal was done. Everyone thought it was done. The teams were exchanging medicals. Like everyone thought it was done. So the communication I had with Jimmy over the weekend was, great, I'll see you in Miami. Like, come to Miami. He's like, come to Miami. I'm going to give my big press conference. I'll sit down with you. Come to Miami. So it's like, great, see you in Miami. You know, start looking at the flight, Zach, right? You
leave, yeah.
Whatever. Like you, I made plans. But then the deal got scratched at the last minute. Just like LeBron with David Blatt that year in the playoffs, I scratched it.
Scratched out that one. Yeah.
It got scratched. So then sort of it became, you know, Jimmy was kind of, I think they were stunned, right? Like, oh, God, okay, now what? Then it was sort of, what do we do? Does he go back to Minnesota? He went back to Minnesota. I don't know how public any of it is, his comings and goings, but I think some of this has leaked out that he, you know, kind of came by the practice facility on a couple of days and talked to Tibbs.
It's like he was in the Breakfast Club while school was going on.
Right. Like, there was right? And he and Tibbs would have these conversations. And Tibbs, I mean, look, we know the relationship between Jimmy and Tibbs, right? And Tibbs would be like, oh, you gotta practice, Jimmy. You can't just walk in the first day of the season and play. You know you're coming back. You know you gotta practice. I mean, there's some taunting involved with both of them, right? Yeah. Back and forth to each other. That's the relationship they have. So there's like a little bit of that. And Jimmy called me. I was actually in, Oakland. The Jump went to Oakland to do the training camp visit with the Golden State Warriors. Scottie Pippen came to Oakland with Steve Kerr.
I saw.
We had so much fun. I landed LAX. I'm getting in my car at LAX to go home. And Jimmy calls and says, I think I'm going to go back tomorrow. So I'm going to have to talk to the media once I start going back.
Right.
Why don't you come out and we'll do the interview? And all of that's really normal, right? All of that. First of all, guys kind of want to group. If you're doing a sit-down interview that's around a newsy event, right, it kind of tends to be like, okay, this is – I'm deciding when I'm ready to talk, right? And then I think a lot of players decide, hey, if I really want to get my say out there and tell my story, whatever it is, whether it's something emotional and deep like the, you know, loss of a family member, or whether it's contentious and possibly controversial like a trade request or a holdout, they want to do it in an environment where it's just a conversation, because that makes a lot more sense to tell a more complicated story than with your back against the wall in a huge media scrum with 16 cameras in your face and people shouting at you from three different directions. And it might not be like a, you know, it might be a non sequitur and you start saying this and then someone asks you about that and all that. So that's not weird at all. That happens all the time that
sure.
People decide, okay, I'd rather do a sit down, that sort of thing. So that's the phone call I got. I'm already at LAX. So I'm like, oh, God. But, you know, go home, you know, repack
settle
and decide
in.
I'm going to go at 6 a.m. in the morning. All of that was totally normal. And then he went to practice.
Yeah.
And I'm on the airplane coming, and I start hearing from Woj. I see the tweets from Woj. I, of course, then text Woj and say, dude, what's happening? All this stuff starts leaking out. You heard Woj say on The Jump yesterday, I don't know, I've only listened to the beginning of his pod with you, so I don't know how much you guys got into this, but Woj said on TV yesterday when, I think Tracy McGrady said, I'm pissed that all that stuff got out of Jimmy at practice, and I've heard a lot of players say that, and Woj's response was, there's 20 guys at that practice. He's like, it's training camp. There's a bunch of end of the bench guys. There's a bunch of G League guys who aren't going to make the team. There's trainers.
That's the case with
whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so I think Woj's point on TV was that stuff gets out because you've got maybe 30 people there who aren't really that, some of which aren't that incentivized to keep it a secret. So this stuff is getting out. I'm supposedly on my way, or I am on my way to Jimmy's house to set up with a camera crew for an interview. And we're like, okay, guess we're doing this. And the reason, obviously, I flew to do the interview was he's a top 10 player who asked for a trade, right? And
yeah.
hadn't shown up to camp until that point. That's an interview I want to do.
Absolutely.
Right? That's a hugely newsy story. I want to find out, when did you ask for a trade? Because that had been a big point of contention, right? Why do you want a trade? What do you expect to happen? How are you going to play with these guys when right now Tibbs isn't trading you? There's so many things that I was like, yeah, I want to know all this kind of stuff. And then, of course, after what happened in practice, and Jimmy, it's funny. Jimmy and Steven Jackson are really close. And you and I have worked with Steven Jackson now for a few years. And all the stuff you see on TV from Steven Jackson is completely genuine. He is an emotional guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
What he says or thinks, like, he's going to say it right there. He's going to feel it. Jimmy is very much the same way. I can see why those two guys are tight. It does not shock me that he walked into practice and, as he put it, it all just came out. Did he, quote, plan to do what he did? I don't think he didn't plan. You know, I mean, I don't think he planned to be quiet and then all of a sudden he erupted. But I don't think he scripted what he did either. I don't know. Do you get that sense?
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know well enough to know.
Right. And obviously I don't know either. It certainly wasn't anything that had been indicated to me ahead of time. But also, I'm not sure it would have mattered either way. you know, he goes and blows up at practice. And of course, we ask him about it right away. That's the first thing I asked him about because it just happened. It was super fresh. And of course, it's sort of a live rolling thing to go back to Bristol and put on the air. So that's the first thing people hear from that. And I think that kind of rubs some people the wrong way. Like, oh, he went and blew up at practice. Then he's running and talking about it. And of course, it was already out. So that's why he talked about it. And Jimmy doesn't. He doesn't lie. He really doesn't. My experience with Jimmy Butler is he will, if you ask him a question, he will answer it. So he did.
Yeah, I think he was just trying to humiliate the Wolves into trading him. Glenn Taylor doesn't want a circus, and he and the practice was like, let's make it a circus. Like, right. Let's go full on.
Okay, so let's go down that road for a minute, right? So let's say that was the intention. Like, let's say it was that thought out. So this is a guy who at least says, and by the way, this now has been out here for a week and Tibbs hasn't disputed it. So I kind of have to, I would believe Jimmy anyway because of the way he delivered the information, but no one from the Wolves has disputed this. Jimmy says that 4 days after last season ended, he got on the phone with Tom Thibodeau and said, I want out, right?
So I think that has been the most, not the most interesting, but From a journalism perspective, mm-hmm. the most interesting thing to watch in this story because that information started to trickle out after mm-hmm. the trade request because the trade request happens on whatever day that was. I was
right.
here Tuesday,
Tuesday or Wednesday.
And then within 2 hours, one of the main stories is, well, this is weird timing. The Wolves are really behind the eight ball.
Why would he do that?
And
right?
then after that, some of these details start to appear in news reports. Well, he indicated his unhappiness, but we don't know how strong he was with his indicating his unhappiness. Then they get stronger and stronger and stronger. And that, to me, from the outside, someone who – I've been a little bit inside the story, but not as much as Woj or John Krasinski. That looks like Jimmy's people saying, uh-oh, that there's a backlash here because of the timing of this. We have to now start to prove – that we did not spring this on the Wolves 2 weeks before training camp. I don't know what was said. I don't know what they said in May. I don't know what they said X days after the playoff elimination. I don't even know if I want to speculate, but I just don't think he went in there and said, trade me now. I'm not coming back in May.
He said it was over the phone, first of all.
Right.
And so I just want to be clear. Like he didn't say that he did that. And no one from the Wolves has disputed his account. So I think you kind of at some point have to – To like say it's all a setup is a
little exact, bit. Is his exact account, I guess you asked him directly and he said yes. His exact account is essentially, I said, I'm leaving, trade me.
Right. Here's the thing.
I just don't.
Well, so here's my question to you. And this is kind of twofold, right? And look, I wasn't there either. So I'm like you. I can only go on what people tell me, right? First of all, Jimmy Butler understands how the NBA works. He's been around long enough. He is aware that if he, for the first time, asks for a trade 2 weeks or a week before training camp, that's not smart on his part, right? That would have been a dumb time to, like, make the first time you ever let anyone know you wanted out. So I find it a little bit hard to believe that he would have done that. It makes more sense to me that he would have done it earlier because it's not just, oh, it would have put the Wolves in a better position. It would put Jimmy in a better position. And if you want to assume that every player is out for himself.
No, like, I don't want to assume that.
Well, no, but even if you
that.
Do, like even if you took it to that extreme, it would have been in his advantage, his own advantage, to make this clear much earlier. Doing it, quote unquote, a week before training camp would not have been smart on his part for himself.
I can just see a scenario where he goes to Tibbs in May and is like, man, I just Carl Anthony Towns. Boy, I don't like this guy. He doesn't play defense. I'm not happy here, Tom. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do in July. I'm not happy. And stop short of doing the absolute end game. And I just the way Tibbs is, I can say, oh, whatever, it's May. We'll see you in September. We're fine. We're going to win games.
Again, I wasn't on the phone, so I don't know what they said. I know one person has started to describe some of those calls, and the other person on the other line hasn't disputed that account.
Yeah.
So that's notable to me. But I wasn't there. I don't know. That's all we do is the fans or journalists or whatever is piece together what everyone says happened.
Yeah, this one is particularly hard. It's almost now becoming like trying to parse trade talks that fall apart.
Right, and that's
teams.
What I was going
to
say. So there's two things here. Part of that, too, is, look, you can have two people who are involved in a situation and give them lie detector tests, and they will absolutely believe they are telling you the true account of what happened, and they will not be telling the same story. That happens any time two people are in a room and something happens, like people are walking out with slightly different variations of, well, did you exactly say this? How clear were you? Well, this is what I was thinking. Well, this is what I was thinking. But here's the other thing to all of this and kind of, if you are Jimmy Butler and you did quote make clear, and we can dispute or wonder to how much he made clear. Right. But you feel, at least in his mind, he has made clear all summer, I want out. And Tibbs clearly, I mean, it's Tibbs came to him, right? So clearly Tom Thibodeau knew there was enough of a problem and that they had enough of a clash going on that Tibbs got on a plane and flew out here to California a week before training camp to talk to Jimmy and try to talk him back into coming to the team. If it had reached that point that Tibbs got on a plane, clearly it's not like the first time he knew there was trouble. It's not like Jimmy wandered into the practice facility and dropped the bomb on him that he wanted to be traded. Clearly there were conversations before that that Tibbs knew I had to better get on a plane and go out there and try to fix this. So clearly Tibbs knew something had to get fixed. But if you're Jimmy Butler, and to whatever degree you have made it clear that you want to get traded, and nothing happens, and then Tibbs comes out to see you and basically tries to placate you, right? By all accounts, right? It's that Tibbs came out to tell him no. We're not going to trade you, and I can make this okay.
I want to see that side of Tibbs.
What Tibbs wore? What do you think he brought? Flowers?
I don't know what he. I just want to see maybe a fruit plate.
Right. Some nice cheeses.
Yeah, I want to see what.
Good.
I want to see.
I brought you chocolate cake, and you did nothing with it.
Well, let's not discuss the cake anymore. It's sitting there, crumbling slowly. Minnesota Timberwolves season.
I gave Chauncey the nicer piece because I knew he was going to eat it.
Listeners, you brush your teeth every day, but you probably don't even think about whether you're doing it right. Quip, Q-U-I-P, Quip is a better electronic toothbrush created by dentists and designers to solve this problem. It makes brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, even, dare I say, enjoyable. It has these little sonic vibrations that are very gentle on your sensitive gums so that you don't brush too hard. A lot of people make that mistake. Some electric toothbrushes are too abrasive. It has a built-in 2-minute timer that has pulses every 30 seconds reminding you to switch sides so you don't overbrush one side, underbrush another side. Why is that? Up to 90% of us don't brush for the full 2 minutes. 2 minutes is a long time if you actually count that out, or don't clean evenly. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, and Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association, has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. It's backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. And Quip, for an electric toothbrush, you won't believe this, Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/low, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast, getquip.com/low. You will get your first refill pack for free with the purchase of a Quip toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/low.
Okay, so you're Jimmy Butler. This meeting happens. You feel like, again, clearly, you've said what you have to say. Tibbs is walking out saying, I'm not going to deal you or whatever. You're Jimmy. You don't go to the media at that point, right? He could have gone to the media then.
Yeah.
He didn't.
Not directly anyway.
Well, he didn't. Yeah. He didn't go out and make a fuss. He didn't, whatever. There was all the usual,
yeah,
you know, whatever. But there was the agent rigmarole. Says, whatever, rigmarole. But there was, he didn't go do that. He could have done something really disruptive at the beginning of training camp. He didn't do it.
No, he just waited a couple more weeks.
He could have. But that's kind of where I'm getting to, right? So then he thought, oh, I'll be a good camper as this trade discussion with Miami is going on. And again, he had talked to me about coming into the jump, and he didn't, because he was like, you know what?
Let's not screw this up.
Blow this one. Let's not make a public deal. He, I think, intended, if the deal to Miami went through, to like show up in Miami and give a press conference and sit down and do an interview and say nice things about everybody and be like, I'm sorry it didn't work out. Like, I think his plan was to sort of have things go the way they usually go. And then that deal that you and I both made plans around that we thought was so close, you think you were upset, you canceled your plans. What do you think Jimmy Butler felt like that Sunday night?
Probably upset.
Right? And so at that point.
But it's all about me. It's all about my
plans. I understand.
It's all about me.
At that point, if he goes into practice, and as you say, even if you assume that he intended to go in and blow things up, you kind of see why it got to that point, because Tibbs has been telling him over and over again, no, it's going to be fine. What is in his best interest to make sure it's not fine, right?
And now they're 0-1. I watched their game last night. I watched most of it this morning. They looked fine. They looked okay. Not particularly good. Mm-hmm. He looks rusty. Towns fouled out in 22 minutes. They lost to the Spurs. I was hoping just for shits and giggles that they started off like 12-0. Like, right. what if they just light the league on fire?
Right. I want to say one more thing, by the way, before we leave the subject of the interview we did and all of that happened that during that week. Obviously, the biggest attention was paid to the story of what happened in practice and then the first 5 minutes of the interview where we talked about what happened in practice. But I will say that even in those first 5 minutes, you saw me say to him, Jimmy, this isn't – he said, oh, I probably should – you know, I don't know if people like what I did. And you saw me say to him, I'm sure there were a lot of people on your team who didn't like what you did, sort of holding him accountable through that. And then through the rest of the interview, getting into all the reasons I wanted to do the interview in the first place. When did you ask for a trade?
Right.
When did this happen? How did this fall apart? What did you think was going to happen when you came to Minnesota? All
and
of that.
What he's really mad about –
yes.
What he's really mad about.
I heard you on your pod
just
with
the
Jeff
extension.
Van Gundy.
That's it.
Okay, so here
and
I
a little
to...
bit that Townsend Wiggins are like figures, and they're like that's Andrew. If Andrew Wiggins' game made a sound, it would be like
man.
That. Every time he takes a 20-footer off a pick and roll, you should make that sound in your room, and then it hits the rim.
You guys are so mean. You think I'm mean. I hear you guys, you and team, all of you guys get on TV and talk about Andrew Wiggins, and you guys are mean.
I'm not mean. That's the noise I make in my hotel room watching a Minnesota Timberwolves game. When he goes around a pick and pulls up from 20 feet, I literally, if the housekeepers walk by in the hallway, they're just going to hear in the room, like a cow.
America does not need to know the noises you make and what you do in your
all
hotel
right,
room.
Enough. you heard Jeff and I talking about the extension,
yes,
which is
actually,
the crux of the issue.
Right. So here is you picked out a paragraph of something he said.
Of gobbledygook. Code.
Right,
code.
And you said, I don't understand what he's saying here. And I am here because I like to personally come as a service of after doing an interview, come and explain the interview. I can come around. I can make some money doing this, right?
Sure. If people can make money, if search firms can make money recommending assistant GM GM jobs, you can make money
I can
doing,
make
anything
doing anything.
You want.
All right. So let me explain that part. Let me clear that up for you.
Okay.
So his point, and whether he said it eloquently or not, you can decide.
He did not. I've decided.
was,
he did not because he's afraid to actually come out and say it directly.
Well, first of all, also, by the way, there's things he can't say directly because he would get fined. So, which we covered in the interview, that there's that clause in the CBA.
Yes.
So some of it has to be a little bit coded. His point was, and that's why he kept talking about honesty, right? In the interview, he kept talking about honesty. I just want people to be honest with me. So his point was, you brought me here and you made this big trade and you told me I was the culture setter. I was the change maker. I was the leader. I was going to be the one who was going to be the extension of you in the locker room. And it was going to be, you know, I'm the star and you want me and it's whatever. And he feels he was clear with them. And clear with the Bulls. I mean, this is going back to when he was in Chicago about what kind of money he would want coming up, right? And I believe that is part of why the Bulls traded him, because they decided they weren't going to be paying him that amount of money.
The Bulls didn't want to pay him his next contract when this one expired.
The same extension we're talking about. The exact same.
No, different.
It's the same.
They faced perhaps the designated player extension.
Yes. But my point is, it's the same period of time. They didn't want to max him out for that era of his career.
There's the extension, and then there's the renegotiate my contract now, bump my salary
the
up
James
to
Harden,
the max.
The James Harden, Russell Westbrook.
The Nick Collison, the Thunder special. Like, they did this with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Bump me up to the max I can get, which for Jimmy would have been a $10 million bump, and then extend off that number going forward.
Yes.
That's what he wanted.
Yes, and that's what he wanted from Chicago.
So when he says to you, it's not about the money, it's about the money.
Well, so here, let me finish this point for you. Because, of course, it's always about the money, but also it's about the money in context, right? Money is not in a vacuum. So he says he was clear with them when he got there about what he would be looking for. And again, I have no reason not to believe him, since that's what all the reporting has been, right? He was clear with the Bulls about what he wanted. He was clear with the Wolves about what he wanted. He wanted money when this next deal is up, for this next deal, however the CBA would allow him to get it. And he says he got to Minnesota and he was clear about what he would be looking for. And they said, you're the leader, Jimmy. You're the guy. You're going to change all this stuff for us. And in that first summer that he got there, they didn't. They could have made more of a deal then. This is Woj has schooled me on contract stuff. If you're shaking your head, no.
I'm gonna clarify.
Okay. Woj just told me that last summer they could have done something.
Well, what does last summer mean? Because people use last
not this past summer, but the summer before.
They couldn't have done it. So they trade for him summer of 2017. He's about to hit the second anniversary of him signing his contract with the Bulls. According to my reading of the CBA, and I checked with the union, and I checked with the league, and I checked with a couple of my legal buddies in the league, and Bobby Marks.
That's all you had to say. You could have just said
all
Bobby
those people.
Marks.
Many yes. of those people.
Many of those. Some people. Wait. Can we diverge into that for a minute?
In a second.
Okay.
In fine. A second. So he's about to hit the 2-year anniversary of his Bulls deal. Okay. He has to wait for them to renegotiate and extend, which means for them to bump up
and then
bump
extend
up
off that.
And yeah. extend. You can only do that on the third anniversary. So when they trade for him in the summer of 2017, right. they have cap room. They have $20 million of cap room.
That's
they cannot use it to bump
to
him
that.
Up
okay.
and go over. They have to wait a year. What they could have done and what his team thinks they should have done is waited that entire year and saved all that money
cap room, right.
so
okay.
that they could do it now, which means probably dump Gorgie.
Right.
Maybe don't extend Wiggins.
Right.
Don't sign Taj Gibson.
Yep.
Don't sign Jeff T. Keep Rubio instead because that's a $5 million difference. And just like essentially don't build a team for a year.
So here, come
and
on.
Then come back to it. It's like I just don't think – look, there's an argument to be made, as I have said, that they absolutely should have done all that, that he's worth it. He's way better than Andrew Wiggins. He's the best player on the team, and it wasn't close last year. And look what the Lakers just did. They said, we'll just make this fake team for a year full of guys on 1-year contracts and figure and keep our flexibility. Like, there's like, it's possible. On the other hand, you're talking about a team that had maybe 10 roster players at that point and a team that hasn't made the playoffs in a gazillion years and wants to actually build a real team.
I don't think gazillion is an official number. I'm just going to call you out on that.
All I'm saying is for the Minnesota Timberwolves,
okay, but
that
is
a
know
tough
what that,
ask.
Do you want to know what that paragraph is about or not?
Yes.
Okay, so listen, interrupter.
wow. It's my podcast.
Yeah, that's true. They tell him that he's a leader. They tell him all this stuff. They don't do whatever the rearranging with money is that first summer, which I don't think he was that angry about, but certainly because it was right when he got there, but they didn't do it. And then this past summer, when they could have moved him up those $10 million and extended,
hold on
and made moves around to do it, even though, as you point out, it would have gutted part of the roster, they didn't do it. And here he is watching Andrew Wiggins get maxed out and watching Karl Anthony Towns sign a rookie max extension. And he is being told every day, not only are you our most important player, even though, as Scottie Pippen put it when he was talking about this on The Jump recently, he goes, everyone in the locker room knows that the pay scale is part of the hierarchy. Like, Steph Curry is one of the rare people who spent a couple years being okay with the fact that, what, Harrison Barnes was making more money than him?
He was like the fifth highest paid player on the team.
But then in most situations, Scotty was like, it is not unusual. Jimmy Butler is not like some crazy person to feel like, huh, everyone's getting paid except for me, and yet you are sitting here telling me, not only are you the leader and our most important player, he was being messaged, he was responsible in some way for the play of those young guys. You got to get them in shape, Jimmy. You got to change their attitude, whatever. And he's sitting there looking at this being like, first of all, it's on me to change how Karl Anthony Towns plays defense or how Andrew Wiggins, what's the sound you made?
Mm.
Right. He's like, that's on me. And you're not even going to pay me for it, but you're paying them. And yes, you are everyone who makes the point that what the Wolves would have had to do this past summer would not have been the smart move for the organization. That is 100% the right point. But players who get messaged over and over again, hey guys, it's a business. Hey, Masai Ujiri upgraded from DeMar DeRozan to Kawhi Leonard. It's a business. This is how it works. DeMar didn't take the max when he could have signed, and when he signed for a little bit less money to stay in Toronto and didn't look around, that was his choice, man. It's a business. What do you expect Toronto to do? If all of that's true, I cannot sit there and blame a player for looking at the organization and saying, yeah, I want all of it. I don't care what you have to do.
Well, okay. I mean, I mean,
that's what that paragraph
is about. And by the way, Scotty would know sympathize better than anyone because he spent a lot of his Bulls career is like preposterously underpaid compared to other people on the roster. I would just say it's not like simple. It's not a simple thing.
No, of course not. When is this ever simple? And by the way, Jimmy's emotional and is the first person to tell you that, which is like leads to all of this being, and things can get misconstrued and things can be complicated and things are, you know, get heightened. Tom Thibodeau is emotional. I mean, we talk about him in this very stoic way, but he obviously is a very passionate guy and has a lot of, you know, feelings about things. So, you know, I'm not surprised that we're here. And the thing that Jimmy said in that interview that like most sort of stuck with me is he looked straight in the camera and said, you know what? We're sitting here right now and everyone's going crazy about this practice. And Tibbs has the door closed in his office and he's smiling and laughing and he's saying, this is exactly what I want. And we had, Stan Van Gundy on the show. And he was talking about like, oh, I don't know if coaches really feel that way. And I believe Jeff said that on your podcast. Yeah. But you know what? Everyone who's been Stan said that he talked to people on the Minnesota coaching staff and they told him that was their best practice of the entire training camp.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe it. I mean, the competition must have been exhilarating.
So everybody's sort of, you know, wringing their hands about what Jimmy did in practice.
I don't care about the practice. Yeah. I just think that the complexities of the renegotiate and extend should be acknowledged.
By the way, this is all complicated. I think this is what has developed in the last few years is a fascinating dynamic, and I don't know if it's solvable, and it's an interesting thing that we don't talk about enough. But for players and an organization, some of these, quote, sacrifices, like for DeMar DeRozan to make the financial sacrifices he did and to do what he did, are necessary to go far. You need that money left over for other players. LeBron James took less money to play for the Heat, right? I mean, there were when they made that deal, those guys took less money. And part of that needs to happen so that guys – so you can have a functional team and guys want to play on functional teams. And in addition – they are told over and over again, we are a family. These are your brothers. And you have to have some of that chemistry, right, to advance far in the playoffs and achieve your goals. There's a reason coaches preach that stuff, because it's important. So I feel like both players and management are kind of put in this crazy situation where they're supposed to, on one part of the day, be telling each other, you sacrifice for me, I can trust you, we're going to build something together, this goes deeper than basketball, we'll be there for you, we'll be there for your family, right, is one of the recruiting pitches that we know teams give to free agents and things like that. And all of that's real to the extent it has to be for you to win. Like, you can't win without doing that stuff. And yet, on the other end of the spectrum, there are days like Masai Ujiri had in Toronto where he can make a deal for Kawhi Leonard.
Yes.
And he does. Because that is what's smart for the organization, and it is smart for this summer, Tom Thibodeau, not to gut his roster for Jimmy Butler. But it just puts everyone in a position where not to recognize – like, it's beyond – I don't know how to fix it, but to not recognize why we are setting people up to have hurt feelings and to have sort of bad business practices – We're rigging the system for people to create these situations.
And Jimmy is in a lot of ways the salary complications that we're talking about. He's a victim of bad timing. He hit free agency one summer before the cap spike.
Right.
He signed for four plus one. So he's under contract if he had done what LeBron and Bosh did, he'd be free to do whatever he wants now or when he wanted to be. And then all these guys are getting paid around him and he has to wait. However, at the end of that wait, I'm sure Tom has told him, you got 5 years, $190 million. 5 years, $200 million. Whatever it is,
I have no idea.
I would be blown away if that conversation ever happened. And I will say this: I don't think it's a guarantee he's getting that from whoever trades for him. In fact, right now, I would bet against it.
Yeah.
Particularly if he goes to Miami, where the Heat are going to show the spreadsheets to him about the tax advantages there and say, you know, this equals that here, it equals this here. Like, yeah. I don't think the 5190 is 100% locked in, rock solid.
And by the way, I don't know if Jimmy had to do it all over again, he would have played it this way again. I certainly don't know if this is the playbook anyone else should use. This is just the way this went down this time. And, you know, I just want to recognize for all these guys, and by the way, for the management side as well, there's a lot of conflicting, not just interests, but even within the same side of the table, there's a lot of conflicting motives and sort of things that you have to figure out how to manage.
I wonder what's going to happen. I still think they're going to trade him. People ask me, obviously, every day. I'm sure they ask you, what do you think is going to happen? I still think he's going to end up going to Miami. I don't know if it's game 10, game 15, game 3. I can't see them playing it out. I mean, Glenn Taylor went on the record with the Minneapolis Star Tribune saying, well, you know, he's probably going to leave after the summer, so I think we should probably trade him. Like, okay, well, that seems a pretty large indication of what you're going to do.
Yep.
And if they, I haven't looked at their schedule, but if they're, you know, 3-7 and it's something
Did you
like
say
that.
It yesterday? Someone's going to think they're a Jimmy Butler away from a championship.
I don't think I said
that. Right? I mean, that's at some point. There's going to be someone, Houston, who thinks, or someone somewhere that thinks, oh, if we add this guy, it'll make a difference. And by the way, Or it's possible that someone on one of those competitive teams gets injured, and then suddenly no one thinks they're close enough to the Warriors to make it to make that deal worthwhile.
Yeah, I think the only two that come up the top of my head of that fit that description of we're a Jimmy Butler away are that have realistic ways to do this are Houston, which has an offer. They're just going to make that offer. Their problem is that people are going to beat that offer.
Right.
Because their picks are too good. You know, their disastrous performance last night notwithstanding. I mean, their picks aren't good enough. They're going to be in the late 20s. And Philly.
Right.
Which is the ready-made team.
Sure.
However, I just don't think Philadelphia is interested at the prices that Minnesota is. I don't think they've even had real talks.
So right. We saw the Kawhi deal, right? Wasn't necessarily the team we thought, and it wasn't even necessarily, whether you think that was a good trade, bad trade for either side, it wasn't necessarily at the, quote, price that a lot of people were saying a week or two before that Kawhi would fetch. So I always think all of these teams should offer what they think they're going to offer. You never know. You might end up being the highest guy in the room just because other people didn't bother.
DeMar looked pretty good last night.
He looked great last night.
28-4-4. I'm looking at the box score now. Looked comfortable.
Yep.
Looked weird. He's the weird one. He's the like
everyone. Tony Parker is the weird one.
No, for some reason it's not that weird to me.
I mean, Tony Parker's not weird. We're talking about the uniform,
right? No, the
right?
uniform. Yeah. Like, oh, that guy in this uniform looks so weird. Yeah. For some reason it's not.
Tony Parker?
It kept being weird to me with DeMar. It's weird to see DeMar and Rudy Gay playing on the same team again after it was such a disaster in Toronto and they had to trade Rudy Gay. And
still having Jakob Poeltl issues.
Only played 8 minutes last night. That was a little sad.
Very upset.
Jakob. But he started. He's a starter for the San Antonio Spurs.
There you go.
He's an 8 minute a game starter. You got to get out of here. It's your birthday. Happy birthday. What are you going to do?
That's between me and my birthday. I don't want to say and then, you know.
Okay. Well, your kids don't make dinner for you or something?
Yeah, I'm going to do a thing with my family, which is going to be very nice. And then,
Well, have fun.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on your show today, and I will be on it again
tomorrow. Thank you for having me on your show.
Rachel Nichols, host of The Jump. It airs every day on various ESPN channels at various times. It's always wonderful to see you. Happy birthday. Go celebrate.
Thank you.
And
are you going to eat that cake?
You can have the cake.
I don't want – I brought you the cake.
All right,
I don't want the cake.
Okay, maybe I'll eat the cake. Lay off about the cake. All right, Rachel, thank you.
Bye.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.